we've seen so many track riders who have been racing World Tour and are extremely strong on the road as well. And I want to be one of those. So I've just put a lot of work into it. And I think I'm pretty comfortable calling myself one of the best sprinters in North America. And now that I've built up this engine to back that up in a road race, I mean, it speaks to a lot of hard work that I'm really proud of.
Welcome to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. I'm Matthew Piaro, and with me is Matt Hansen. How's it going, Matt?
Welcome to Matt Hansen.
Are you riffing on my intro?
No, I love your intro.
Okay, do my intro.
Welcome to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's my radio intonation. You know that. On this episode of the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast, I speak with Maggie Coles-Lister. She is no stranger to Canadian cycling fans. We've seen her race in the crits in the U.S. She's got quite the palmares on the track. And of course, nationals this year, right, Matt? She did. She surprised us, I would say.
Yeah, and not a surprise too, right? Because, I mean, look at her kind of killing it in the scratch races on the track for so long. And I mean, a crit is basically a scratch race. But the road race, I guess, was a big surprise. But again, she just used that ferocious sprint of hers.
It's true. And I say in the interview, I think of her primarily as a crit racer and a track star. But yeah, she has been racing road forever as well. So it's, yeah, surprise, not a surprise. But yeah, I was really excited to talk with her about, yeah, all her recent successes. She's on the podium a lot at those American Criterium Cup races.
Almost always, it seems.
Yeah. And then she jumped into a track race in T-Town. And again, was on the podium also with Nairé Baraclough, who we spoke with over in Milton. They're actually both getting ready for Commonwealth Games.
Yeah, this should be exciting. Some more. Yep. A lot of Canadians that could do well there, I think.
Oh, actually, this is coming out on the day that Commonwealth Games start. So that's exciting.
Oh, right, because we're in the past right now.
We're in the past right now. Yeah, we realized this last time. But anyway.
But we didn't tell anyone, thankfully.
Oh, no, they knew.
We cut that part.
No, we didn't. That was in. You will hear my conversation with Maggie where we talk crits, road races, points races, scratch races, and that's only scratching the surface.
You've been waiting a long time to use it, aren't you? Haven't you?
It's good material. Before I get into my conversation with Maggie, how are you doing, Matt?
Oh, pretty good. Thanks for asking. Lots of good weather here. A little hot.
Yes, we're outside again in the outdoor studio. We've aimed the mics to try to not catch all the air conditioners in the neighborhood. The one at the church there is ticking away nicely.
Do you want me to go talk to them?
To the wonderful people at the church?
To tell them to turn off their air conditioning?
Yeah, no. No, we'll be okay. We'll be okay. You done any good rides there, bud?
I did do a pretty good one on Saturday. I rode to Hamilton to visit my in-laws. Well, I wasn't specifically visiting my in-laws, but I was riding there to make a reason to ride 6 hours, because I think it was about 160K there and back.
You took the scenic route.
I did take the scenic route. I mean, I could have taken the highway, correct. That's probably not the best thing. But the funny part was that when I arrived, of course, I have a mother-in-law who's an amazing cook. She used to be a cook before she retired. She makes incredible amounts, like thousands of pierogies, cutlets. She's Polish. She makes just nutty amounts of food. So I said to her the night before, I said, do not make food for me. Just give me a sandwich. Because if I eat the food there, I will just fall asleep. You know, I can see her showing up with a Polish beer and like 18 pierogies, and that's the appetizer.
It's pierogi, by the way. It's already plural.
Okay. All right. We can cut that part out.
No, go on.
raviolis. So I show up, and of course, that cagey lady, she snuck in not just a sandwich, which was the size of my head, 5 deviled eggs, some charcuterie, and I know that she had a pan on the ready, waiting to fry up some pierogi.
There you go.
And if I just said one thing, just one look, she would have run into the kitchen and made me 18,000 calories, and I would have just fallen asleep. So, bless your heart, though.
Well, it's funny. All my grandparents are from Poland, and as a teenager, if I was visiting my grandmother, was biking over to her house, I would give her zero warning, even though I was a hungry teenager. She'd be ticked that I didn't give her warning, and she would say, I would have cooked you, like, and I'm like, I know, Babcia, that's why I gave you no warning at all.
I fast before I go there. I'm like those hot dog guys, those hot dog contest guys. I don't eat anything in the morning. I just leave that stomach as empty as possible because I know something bad's going to happen.
Okay, here, Mateusz, have a pickle. This is for your ride.
Yeah, tuck.
I went for a big ride. Thank you for asking.
Did you go for a big ride?
I did. I did the Reggie Ramble. Friend of the magazine, friend of the podcast, Holly Clark of the Toronto Hustle, she warned me about the halfway point when you do the 130. So you come back, you start at this barn in Warkworth, Ontario, and logistically it's brilliant. You leave the barn, you do your first loop, you come back to the barn, which is the start finish, and you can get bottles and get some food.
And, or just and stop.
Just stop, because if you're like me, you went out too hard and you're pretty gassed by the time you get to the...
And it's just sitting there with food and respite and shade.
Yeah, you could get beer. But I steeled myself to get back onto my bike, and it was tough. It's a good course. It's my first time doing it. It was good and tough.
But I heard that each lap gets progressively harder, too. I mean, not just because of the fact that you're riding hours more, but it was the first lap technical and the second one is less technical but hillier or something?
I found the second lap less technical. There was just sort of fewer organizer Jeff affectionately calls ambushes. Mm-hmm. So there are definitely more ambushes where you just, you know, turn a corner and you're going up this.
It's less lumpy.
Less lumpy. You're going up this ATV trail. There were fewer of those. There was a doozy gravel climb. And it was very wise they put a photographer on this climb because, man, the temptation to walk was up there. But, you know, the motivation to keep pedaling when there's someone pointing a camera.
I like
at
your suffer face. I haven't seen it. Well, normally because I'm ahead of you, you know, so I can never really see your suffer face unless there's photos.
That's why you go back through the race photography to see my pain face. That's lovely of you. Thank you.
Well, you know, speaking of races, we're still buzzing from Hugo Uhl's incredible Tour de France victory.
Yeah, that recent win. Holy cow. We were in our respective offsite offices, locations, just texting each other, using the Slack, losing our minds.
Screaming at the TV or the computer.
Oh, man, that was historic and fantastic. Like, such a great win. Like, this tactical savvy... having Woods behind, also
and
riding
also the
well.
Tribute to his brother. I mean, that was just. I mean, I think I felt some tears in my eyes when he said that.
Yeah, I got a little choked up. But also, it is just so mind blowing to me. Like, you can say all you want, I have this goal, and it's a noble goal. But you know how cycling works. The odds of you.
That's a hell of a long game he played there.
And I'm just so happy. Yeah. I'm just so happy it worked.
No, it was great.
He is so deserving. And it's so funny, too, because whatever, we're all rooting for Woods and Uhl and Boivin and Duchesne, and we want the best for them at the Tour. And you looked at that stage, and you're like, two big climbs. Like, Woods is probably the man for this, but it's just so fitting that, in retrospect, it seems it's so fitting.
Well, I mean, a solo breakaway, he is this fantastic time trialist, so it actually, you know, at the end, he was doing the time trial of his life.
Pretty much, yeah, it was fantastic. So, yes, we got to wait for the dust to settle and get maybe a good in-depth conversation with Hugo going pretty soon.
I'm sure we're not the only ones trying to get a hold of him right now.
No, he's suddenly very popular. I guess the Tour de France stage does that.
I guess. I've never won one. Never even done one.
No.
I have ridden Alpe d'Huez with my dad when I was younger. That doesn't really count as a race, though, does
it? Did you win?
I dropped him right at the end. Yeah.
That's right.
Show that old man.
See your dad.
He's probably my age now.
Ooh.
Then.
Yeah. But the time travel once again.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I feel already older just doing this podcast.
Let's travel back to my conversation with Maggie Coles-Lister. Maggie Coles-Lister. We're speaking in late July, not long after the Salt Lake Criterium. You're second in the American Criterium Cup race. The next day, you won on the Sugar House Park circuit. That was your first win in your national championships jersey. How did that feel?
That was so cool. It's kind of surreal to be racing in the Maple Leaf. you just admire the riders every year who win the Maple Leaf. And for so long, I've thought of myself as better on the track than on the road. But that has really started turning around in the past couple of years since I've been racing with DNA Pro Cycling and down in the US. So just to have that Maple Leaf on my chest and be winning a race in it and just be consistent really in all the races I've been in this year is just such a cool feeling.
You actually won two national championships jerseys. You won the road race and you won the Criterium race. I maybe for better, for worse, I think of you as a track rider, as a crit rider, but you're no stranger to the road. What does the road race national championships win say about your skill set?
I think it just really speaks to the fact that I've put a lot of work in on the road as well. And I'm just at this point, like I went to two junior world championships when I was younger and then had some really bad accidents in 2018. And as I was coming back from that, I mean, I was young and going through growth and change and like gained some weight, which made me lose some confidence on the road. And then it's just been kind of through the pandemic that I've really put a lot of effort back into it, because we've seen so many track riders who have been racing World Tour and are extremely strong on the road as well. And I want to be one of those. So I've just put a lot of work into it, and I think I'm pretty comfortable calling myself one of the best sprinters in North America. And now that I've built up this engine to back that up in a road race, I mean, it speaks to a lot of hard work that I'm really proud of.
What does a win in Salt Lake City mean to you? I bring that up because you were based in that town last year in 2021, and you're based there or you spend a lot of time there this year as well. Do you feel connected to that city?
I actually do. It's funny, when I first went down there, because I'm from Vancouver, I feel really at home having both ocean and mountains, which may make me sound totally entitled. But then I went down to Salt Lake and it just has the mountains, but it is beautiful. And I could just get lost in those mountains for hours and just go on long rides and have all these views, and there's wildlife. And it just feels like if I was to choose somewhere more inland, like that would hands down be what I consider now a second home and where I'd want to live. And just like, yeah, such an outdoorsy town. And at altitude, I love training at altitude too. So there's that. And so, yeah, Salt Lake is where our team headquarters are and essentially our home base for DNA. And we have a bunch of sponsors down there like DNA Cycling and Envy, Carbo Rocket. They're all based there. So they were all out watching and doing some video stuff with us. And it was just such a fun weekend having all those people there, like just supporting us and cheering us on, and just like such a fun atmosphere among our team.
Crit racing has a long, strong history in North America, from BC Super Week and Mardi Lachine, both of which unfortunately are on hiatus. But there's also the various incarnations of the Criterium series in the US. They don't draw the same attention as the big World Tour road races, but it's a pretty healthy scene. Can you give us a sense of the crit scene in the US?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, it doesn't really draw the same attention as, the World Tour stuff over in Europe. But I think crit racing for North America is essentially where it's at. I mean, North America notoriously like short, fast, go out, drink beer, like just have a good time, short attention span, you know? And that's what crit race and excitement and speed. And that's exactly what crit racing is. And like you go to these towns like Tulsa and Athens Twilight and, I mean, Armed Forces and Virginia and all this. And these races have just been built up so much, and thousands of people come out and everybody in the town knows about it. They may know nothing about bike racing, but they know about Tulsa Tough. And you get a ton of people out there, and the race just has history and support. And I think now having the live streams too, there's a lot of excitement for it among people who even don't race it, and like families can watch it. So like my family gets involved with it back in Canada. Yeah, I think it's just really growing in popularity and what bike racing in America needs. And it's just like, just being there in person, it's so electrifying. And I mean, I always race better when there's a really high strung, exciting atmosphere. And so like, it's my like cup of tea.
I also wonder if that's just a U.S. thing. What I'm reminded of a bit is I covered the Philadelphia Classic 1 year, and you know, I'm walking up the Manioc Wall, and I'm sure 90% of those people did not, you know, are not regular cycling fans, but man, they got into it. So I feel like there's a just this vibe of like, we're gonna get behind this thing that's in our town. Also, maybe crit racing is a bit like NASCAR. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I think of. I think it's kind of the NASCAR F1 of bikes. And yeah, like some of these races, you go to these small towns and like guaranteed most of those people would never watch a bike race otherwise, but they get really excited about this race that brings people from all over North America and sometimes all over the world. And I mean, people host riders and they get really involved with it and all their friends get involved with it. You know, like there's just such a sense of community, I guess, really around what crit racing is and what it kind of brings to the table.
Tell us where you are sitting within the American Criterium Cup.
So I am currently first overall in the ACC. American Criterium Cup, and I am also first for the sprint classification, and our team should be first as well, I think, by now.
Now, you're going to the Commonwealth Games. Actually, this episode is coming out just as the Commonwealth Games are starting. Will that be a problem for your lead?
I have a pretty big lead, so really, last Saturday at Salt Lake was an opportunity for me to get max points and to really solidify my lead. So I definitely have a bit of a cushion, but I mean, you never know, like that gap can be closed. So we will have riders at the upcoming ACC races that I will not be at. So they'll be working to, you know, try to take points away from other riders.
Interesting. Interesting. It's still a team sport.
Still team sport, still strategy, even when you're not there.
At the Salt Lake City Criterium, a fight broke out between Justin and Corey Williams and Mike Hernandez after the men's event. It followed a contact between Corey Williams and Hernandez in the men's race. This fight had an effect on your race the following day as the Williams' team, a Legion of Los Angeles, pulled both its men and women's teams out of the next day's race. The team cited, and I quote, "a lack of accountability from race officials has resulted in a peloton that lacks the respect and safety expected within the professional ranks, unquote. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the ideas of respect and safety. Why don't we start with safety? Do you feel organizers are mitigating the risks as best as they can in these crits?
You know, I think, yes, I think organizers, I know they do the best they can and they put a lot of work into these races. These crashes, I do find it interesting. These crashes we've seen really, like this bulk of them happening in these past 2 years. And what's that following? Like a pandemic and a period of no racing. So I think the dangers of courses are just being highlighted by how many crashes we've had. But that is really coming from riders getting really strong on Zwift and these other platforms over a pandemic and just haven't had the opportunity to race in fields of 50 or 100 riders. And so it's like lack of skill at this point that we're seeing happen. And, you know, I think that is something that I hope will kind of come and catch up in the next couple of years, assuming we don't have another pandemic. So I think that's kind of the effects that we're seeing out there, at least from where I stand and my point of view.
The next part is respect. And it may be related, or what's maybe related to that idea is the care or recklessness that riders have in the bunch. What is respect like, and the sort of care that riders have for one another out on the road?
You know, I feel like there's a bunch of stuff I could say to this. I am going to like preface this with, I am close to almost everybody out there in the Peloton and know almost all those riders. I know the Legion riders quite well. I have major respect for everybody out there racing. I think when someone is talking about respect in a Peloton, there are two sides to that respect. Like, it's a give take kind of relationship. So even if there's somebody out there racing who has had great successes in the past and is known as an incredible crit racer, most riders do respect that, but they also have to be respected in return. So that's kind of my philosophy towards that. And where I think that might be lacking, I'm not sure. Like, at the end of the day, me and my teammates just want to go out and race our bikes hard and have a good time. And as we saw Sunday at Sugar House, like, that's a lot of the other teams out there just want the same. And that was arguably one of the hardest crits we've done this year, but also the most enjoyable for everybody there. And so, I think that's kind of my take on the situation. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's just bike racing, and we all want to stay up and not lose skin doing this and just have a good time.
This episode of the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast is supported by MS Bike. August is just around the corner, and that's when MS Bike events kick into high gear. There's one in Annapolis Valley, Nova Scotia, another in Cowichan, BC. There's Ottawa to Brockville, and also Gimli, Manitoba, and Trois-Rivières, Quebec. And if you can't make any of those August rides, well, you have a very busy August. But there are also some rides in September. Did you know, on average, 12 Canadians are diagnosed with MS each day? So, don't delay. Head to msbike.ca. Sign up for a ride and start fundraising. The money you raise will help those with MS. All that begins at msbike.ca. Returning back to the national road race that, or the national road races that you did in Edmonton at the end of June, who was at Nationals supporting you?
Yeah, my whole family was there supporting me, and my boyfriend was there racing, and you know, I'm on the road so much, so I don't get to see them all that much. So my dad was there, and he's also my coach, so he was there driving and supporting. My mom was there in the feed zone and helping me out with all the race details. My younger but middle sister, Kaylin, she was there racing as well. And then my littlest sister, who is 10 years younger than me, Campbell, was there helping me out and in the feed zone. So it was very, very special, because that hasn't really happened before.
I should say, in the interest of full disclosure, I do know your dad, Barry, a bit, and he was there on behalf of Canadian Cycling Magazine helping us with our coverage. So then there was an instance of your dad, who's not only your coach, but he's now interviewing you after your win. How did that feel?
That is so cool. I mean, him and I have been such a great team, and we've worked together, I mean, since, what, like 8 years now? He's been my coach. And we're just so close. And to have, I think for him, for sure, it was very emotional for me to be the one he was interviewing as Canadian champion. And like, I knew I had it in me. He knew I had it in me. But then to actually do it is something else. You can believe it all you want, but you just don't understand what it's like until you actually make it happen.
Have there been any ups and downs having your dad as a coach? Because, you know, there's the old joke of like, family means not having to say you're sorry. So there's a different dynamic there. So yeah, I'm just wondering about that as a coach and father-daughter relationship, a coach and athlete.
Yeah, you know, I think most people would be surprised to find out it has worked out super well. And I mean, he knows me better than most people. And I think just the nature of how our family is, like we are very, very tight knit and are all very close and very open and all that, which is great. It's pretty cool when your coach also just knows you so well, so can hear it in your voice when you're tired or when something doesn't go right, but then they also know exactly how to cheer you up or tell you to harden up or whatever it is that is needed. And so I think that's what makes this relationship and this coaching dynamic really special. I mean, of course, I'm a teenage girl and have like gone through just periods of like independence and growing up as everybody does. So I think the hardest part in the coaching dynamic was just navigating that. Like what is coach and what is dad? How much do we talk about cycling and bike racing when I'm home? Because I think he can talk about it a lot more than I can. That's just how it is. And so just like navigating those preferences and like how that works out. But we've been able to do it. And obviously we're still working together and it's better than ever, arguably, because we're getting the results we've been dreaming of. So
you're right. It definitely seems to be working.
Yeah, I definitely think communication and just being honest is for sure like the key to most things in life.
Soon after Nationals, you were in Pennsylvania racing in T-Town. What drew you into that race? It's like it's the road season, but you're jumping into this. I believe it was a C1 race. Yeah, what took you there?
So I've actually been down racing at T-Town every year, I guess, except for the pandemic year, for the past, like, since 2018. Getting C1 points is important, and just keeping yourself ranked well. Also, like, the just track racing, there's just not much of that, especially over here. Like, if you went over to Europe, you might have a bit of an easier time finding C1s and C2s to race, but there's only three Nations Cups. There's only one World Championships. Maybe there's a Commonwealth Games / Pan Am Championships to do. But getting those race points and that experience and just, I guess, practice is what it is essentially, is really important. And especially for, like, I really wanted to be down there to do Madison. And that's something we haven't had a lot of opportunity to race in the past couple of years. So starting to build that up and make sure we have points so we can qualify for like worlds, and also just starting to race more with the other Canadians and putting together a pairing is kind of important for where we're at.
Mm-hmm. You were in the Madison with Nairi Barraclough and you guys were second. How was that race for you guys?
Yeah, I think that was our first time racing together. And so we'd practiced once, maybe the day before. So I was really impressed with how we rode. And I mean, we're both very strong, but like kind of similar riders in a sense. And so I think that just showed that we do complement each other very well. And there is something to build on there moving forward. I mean, Jen Valente is an absolute beast. And has been flying for a few years now. So just figuring out ways to beat her, I guess.
Does the new Nations Cup setup, which replaces the World Cup setup run by the UCI, affect your ability to get points? Like, were there more on offer, or was it "quote unquote" easier to get them with the World Cup scenario?
That's a good question. I think what's unique about these Nations Cups is they, like, you still need a minimum amount of points to race a Nations Cup. Those points still come from, like, say, Nationals, C2 races, C1 races. So you still need to do those just to be qualified to do a Nations Cup, for bunch racing at least. As for, is it easier to get points? I mean, they do, like, the unique thing that they've brought in with the Nations Cups is they have trade teams and there's qualifiers. So there's generally more people at some of these Nations Cups, which can make it harder to get points and get good results and make it into the finals. But also, I mean, I guess if you race for a trade team and the national team, like, give you more opportunity.
On the idea of teams, you are in T-Town on Star Trek Cycling. You race the crits as part of DNA Pro Cycling. How many teams are you on? How many teams can you be on?
just those two plus the national team. Yeah, just those two. So you can have a UCI track trade team as well as still race for your pro team. And that's just kind of an agreement we can make, like, between DNA and Star Trek, because DNA just supports me on the road and Star Trek is just on the track. And yeah, it was just kind of a unique opportunity for me to join them and just get a little bit more support on the track. And I've known Pete Taylor, who runs Star Trek, for years, a great guy and just super passionate about cycling and actively just wants to help me. And just, I mean, what's unique kind of to this year with the national team is we do have some added fees with being on the national team. So that just racing for Star Trek has just helped alleviate some of those costs for me.
If you're on a world team, would that make things easier?
A world team, like on the road?
Yeah, on the road. Like if you were at the Division One of women's road cycling, would that, I don't know. What I'm asking is, it seems like you're almost in the gig economy version of cycling. And not that cycling's ever been that stable of a job any time, but it feels like you have lots of logistics and management as part of your cycling career. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's a fairly fair assessment. I mean, it all does flow pretty nicely, and I do have, between my coach and agent, helping me figure it all out. So that's definitely helpful. I mean, even if I was on a world tour team, like, they wouldn't be a track UCI team. So I might still find an opportunity to race with the track UCI team, because on top of, like, the whole cost thing, it does give you access to Nations Cups. If you're not either selected for the national team or just to go with another rider. So that's always an option if that's needed in the future.
Last year, you became a registered yoga teacher. And you're also a personal trainer, is that correct?
Yes.
But I understand that before you took up yoga, you couldn't touch your toes. Is that true or an exaggeration I heard somewhere?
No, that's pretty much true. I was very inflexible and, yeah, I got some free passes to my local yoga studio. And what really drew me to it was, like, the crazy handstands and arm balances and being extremely competitive in yoga classes against everybody who was there, which is not the approach to yoga that I've since adopted. I am now the person who everyone probably thinks is actually 50 years old and uses a million blocks and bands and anything to help me.
I love the idea of competitive yoga. Like, I love the sort of conflict inherent in that idea.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's just, like, in my, we have on our team. It's in my DNA.
Aha. I could see that getting a lot of mileage. Yes.
Yeah. You get a lot of mileage out of that one. So yeah, like that's where it started. I'm always looking for ways to improve myself as an athlete, and being able to start yoga was that for me, and the competitiveness is what kept me in it. And then I just started loving the other parts of it and how it was something I could just bring on the road with me wherever I went and have as, like, a routine every night, no matter whether I was in Europe or Asia or Vancouver. didn't matter. Like when I think I started the teaching, started working through it in 2018 when I had those three bad crashes and concussions. And I was also taking some school courses at the time and had to drop that because of the post-concussion symptoms. I just couldn't focus through, I couldn't sit and focus for like 30 minutes at a time. But still, yoga was something I could keep doing physically and practicing in that sense. And those courses were a little bit more, because it wasn't me teaching myself like with online courses, which was extremely hard for me to do at that point of time in my life. But having yoga taught to me and the philosophies of it taught to me was something I could manage. So that's when I really started the teaching. And then obviously I was traveling through 2019 and missing some courses. So kind of my pandemic project came back to finishing that off and getting certified and going through my exams with that. And then the certified personal trainer was another pandemic project.
Has yoga helped your cycling specifically?
I would say so. And like it's helped me understand physiology better and my anatomy. And I guess being an athlete is figuring out how much you need to stretch and then how much is too much stretching. And it just helps you understand how to recover from injuries and different methods of how you can recover from injuries and what works. Just adds tools to your toolbox, you know? But I think the bigger part of yoga that has helped me as an athlete has for sure been the meditation and mindful aspect of it. So some of the courses you do through the teacher training are courses on meditation. And so you learn lots of strategies for that. Since I've done my teaching, that's been a daily practice of mine. The meditation you can take into how you're preparing for a big event or when you're there, staying calm. And it's all layered, like aspects of visualization of a race and all that. And then also the other piece of yoga that's been huge has been breath work. And I think just learning how to maximize my lung capacity, how to breathe, and just using different breathing exercises and all that between the mindfulness and the breathing has made me, for an example, 30-minute efforts. Oh, sorry.
No, I was going to just interrupt on the breathing aspect. I find fascinating. You mentioned that in an article that appeared in Canadian Cycling Magazine. And I feel like breathing, it's an interesting thing because I've spoken with a coach about it. And your first instinct or one's first instinct is to think, breathing, you just do it. What do you got to think about? But I feel like the idea of breathing efficiently is being explored a lot more by athletes. Is it efficiency and that you've thought of, or is there another angle on breathing that you've brought into your races?
There's a few different angles. I mean, efficiency is for sure an angle. Also, just pacing yourself, using your, like, breath is such a powerful tool. You can use it to, like, during efforts, find a rhythm with your breath. And just to have the capacity and knowledge and practice to have that, like, you know, proper inhalation and exhalation that you can kind of meter during hard efforts and like actually manipulate and control is something pretty cool. And yeah, breathing is something you don't have to think about. But then when you do, I think you just realize how powerful it is. And I mean, just like it controls your parasympathetic nervous system and all that and stuff that just gets kind of out of control when you're living this fast life of racing and traveling and different people and teams and teammates and stresses and anxiety and all that. So it is a very easy and accessible tool you can just access for both racing and training and just dealing with people in life in general.
And you were going to say something about, there's something about 30-minute efforts and your breath work. Is there something you can unpack around those two elements?
Yeah, so that was kind of the combo of meditation and breath work. So I used to hate anything over like probably 5 minutes. I would just get bored and I'm still not the best at time trials, like self-proclaimed. They're not my specialty. I've had to work really hard at them But having that just meditation and breath work and understanding rhythm and just being able to keep myself calm and focused has been huge in me getting through those kinds of efforts. And I think like I did lots of those style tempo plus efforts during the pandemic when I was really working on my aerobic base and building back that road fitness, being able to get through those efforts and not driving myself crazy was pretty cool. And I think huge in getting me to where I am now.
Tell me about the role animals play in your life.
So I grew up show jumping and just horseback riding, anything to do with horses for the first, basically from 5 years old to like 15, 16, 17, pretty much until bike racing and travel took over my life. I was competitive in show jumping and horseback riding. And so just animals, like I just have a natural love for animals, and I grew up on a river, and so there was salmon that came up every year, and there's bears in the neighborhood, and just there, I'm just like surrounded by animals when I'm home. And so I think growing up on a river, me and my friend used to do these crazy things and just go down, and after the salmon spawned and died on the beach, we would like dissect them.
Oh.
And study their different organs and all this. And so that kind of led into me being interested in marine biology, but then I also really wanted to be out in a field and not necessarily research based. And so kind of what I've come to, combining my love of the ocean and rivers and my love for animals, is when I'm done racing, I want to get into vet school and specialize in aquatic vet.
Ah. Do you feel that's a bit far off for you, or are you taking steps towards that even now?
I am taking steps towards that. I'm working on my undergrad right now with a major in biology and actually a minor in kinesiology, since I've done all this yoga and personal training. I still have an interest in all that stuff and just want to keep as many doors open and as possible. But definitely doing this undergrad to expedite the process of when I'm done racing to be able to apply to get into vet school. I think that is still quite a ways off. And I am, of course, that's my plan now, because I don't like being without a plan or something in action. So it just helps me to have that like arranged in my head. But of course, it's life and anything can change. And I'm open to whatever path or however long I will be racing for. I just know right now that when I want to do vet school, I want to be done racing and just be able to commit to that, because that's not something that's easy. I don't like giving 60% in a bunch of different things. So even though it sounds like I have all this on the go, like right now I'm not doing any courses for school because I'm traveling too much and on too many different time zones. And it was just at a point where I was doing like school at 60 or 80% and racing at 60 or 80%. And now I'm 100% into racing and I'm seeing the results. It's all a balance. And I think figuring out what works for me, and that, like, I'm always super impressed by people who are doing it all, but that's just not what I value. And doing the yoga teacher training courses, I was working with a charity called Can Fund, all this during the pandemic made me see the opposite end of that, of doing so much that I was just overwhelmed. And now I've kind of found this balance. So, and this is good. In the winter, when things are maybe settled a bit more, I'll take courses again.
As we're speaking, you are in Milton and you're preparing for the Commonwealth Games. And as I mentioned, this episode will come out just as the games are starting. What are you most looking forward to at that event?
Well, I think it's really cool that I'll be going to the Commonwealth Games and doing the track events and the road race. I think the course for the road race is more suited for a sprinter. And so I'm really excited to see what our strategy is there. I mean, there's me, Allison Jackson, Leah Kirchman, Simone Boyard, Nairi and Ariane, who are here and doing the track with me. So we have a super strong team for that. And for the track stuff, just every time I've raced, I've seen better and better results and consistency. And so, yeah, I'm excited to go medal hunting in the bunch races there and also see our team pursuit come together. Yeah, I mean, that's what we're currently here in Milton working on. So I'm excited to see what we can do.
And what's next for you later this year, like following the Commonwealth Games and into the fall and maybe even winter?
It's going to be a little bit more track focused. There's still some of the ACC races and obviously road at the Commonwealth Games that I will do. But I mean, we have track worlds in October, and prior to that, we will have qualifications and track nationals, and we have Commonwealth Games, and we have Pan Am Champs right after Commonwealth Games. My order is kind of all over the place, but that is, I guess, what I'm thinking in my head. And I really hope to be able to go back over and do the Track Champions League again this year. So that first race will be November 12th. So that would be kind of a chunk of my winter. And then find somewhere warm to train for a while.
Excellent. Well, good luck with all the racing, Maggie. Thank you for making the time. And yeah, we're looking forward to seeing how the results pan out for the rest of the year.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And that's the episode. It is written and edited by me, Matthew Piaro. I had help from that guy over there.
Quite a bit of help. I would say I kind of kept this boat afloat.
Thank you, Matt Hansen, for all your flotation.
Yeah, okay. We can cut that part.
Yeah. And also thank you to Terry McCall. He's always giving us a hand in the background. This episode is produced by Adam Killick. He wrote the music too. Thank you, Adam. And good luck to all the athletes at the Commonwealth Games, which is starting today in Birmingham.
England.
It's in England, yes.
Not in Alabama. That'd be a weird place for Commonwealth Games.
It would be a bit of an odd choice. But good luck to all the athletes. And also thank you for listening. Please rate and review the show. Ride safe, and I'll talk to you later.